You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. On today's show, we have a doubleheader split to discuss as the Mets found a way to get the first game in their doubleheader against the Cardinals on Tuesday. I'll recap those games throughout the first two segments. Then in the final segment, some injury news to go through. We have the update on Jacob DeGrom. Brandon Nimmo suffered an injury in game two of the doubleheader, but it does not seem too serious. Also, I want to talk about this offense a bit, which has been cooling. Is it time to sound the alarm bells and maybe call on a top prospect like a Nick Plummer to help this team? I'll go through that a little bit on the show as well. A lot to get to. Before we do, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. You can also find some of my writing at justbaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, again, this was a positive result, if you ask me. I know that when you get game one of a doubleheader, obviously, you love to get game two, and the Mets had their opportunities in that second game. Don't get me wrong. They could have absolutely won it. But if you went into the day and someone said, hey, the Mets are going to split, I think you'd be happy because there was no guarantee that the Mets were going to get through that first game. And that was a great win to find a way when you had Trevor Williams on the mound in a bullpen game and you end up scratching across a win. And again, you know, did the Mets look great in that game either? I wouldn't necessarily say so. But one of the things I've said recently when it comes to this team is, you know, they're not going to look perfect all the time. They're not going to be 14-5 in every stretch of 19 games that they were at the beginning of the season. Right now, they're going through it a little bit. Starling Marte on the bereavement list. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Brandon Nimmo now has a little bit of an injury. He fouled a ball off himself in the second game. Shouldn't be too bad, but still, there's some concern there. You know, Tyler McGill just went on the IL. So you're starting to go through it a little bit, and this team is still keeping their head above water. They're still playing 500. They're still winning series. They're still doing the little things, and it's enough that they can maintain their lead in the division, and hopefully they can go on another run here very soon. But you look at this game, and honestly, if you really had to boil it down, I kind of think the Cardinals lost that first game as much as the Mets won it because, I mean, realistically, you look at the pitching the Mets got, and Trevor Williams was solid. Don't get me wrong. Four innings to get that out of him is awesome. 65 pitches, 46 strikes. He attacked hitters, no walks, gave up four hits, had six strikeouts. But I mean, if you're watching the game, it's not like he was blowing people away. It's not like he was really nasty out there. The Cardinals just hit into outs. And sometimes if you're talking about a hitter like Tyler O'Neill, just struck himself out. I mean, couldn't even catch up to a 91-mile-per-hour fastball by Trevor Williams down the pipe. So, look, you take any win you can get. For the Mets, came down to getting an early lead, and that's something they've done well this season. In the bottom of the second inning, Dominic Smith got a hit. Eduardo Escobar drew a walk. Then Luis Guillorme got a hit to load the bases. We'll talk about Guillorme a little bit later. I'm basically just going to go through and look at how the Mets lineup has fared over the last 2 weeks, and Guillorme has been one of their best hitters. But the Mets have that spot with the bases juiced, and they only score a run. That's with no outs, by the way. Travis Jankowski ends up hitting into a force out. He's too quick to double up. But then Mazzucca gets out, and Brandon Nimmo gets out. And you're like, I cannot believe the Mets didn't do more that inning. But they did enough. For this specific game, they did enough. In the third inning, Francisco Lindor reached on an error, and then Jeff McNeil doubled him home. He had himself a very solid doubleheader. Continues to produce for this Mets team. Continues to produce clutch hits and really big spots. So another one there. Dom Smith then doubled home McNeil, and the Mets were up 3-0. And from there, they cruised somehow. I ended up tweeting out, I think it was after they pulled Williams. I said, if Buck Showalter gets through six scoreless with Jake Reed, he's living right. And it happened. And it made no sense because, look, with all due respect to Jake Reed, outside of being the side armor that gives you a different look, there was no reason why the Cardinals shouldn't have just piled on runs against him. I mean, he was leaving stuff either out over the heart of the plate or out of the strike zone entirely. And he walked a couple of batters, somehow got a couple of strikeouts. Look, the Cardinals, like I said, they looked really bad in that first game, like really bad. And outside of Seth Lugo, who had a really nice 1-2-3, I don't even think any of the Mets pitchers really threw the ball that well. I mean, Drew Smith gave up a home run. That's now three straight appearances where he's allowed a run after, I believe it was 12 to start the year without allowing a run. So that's not a great sign, but it was a home run that I believe Paul Goldschmidt hit. That's a good batter. It was either Goldschmidt or Arenado, but I'm pretty positive that was Goldschmidt. And for Smith, like, he wasn't going to be perfect all year. He still has a 1.69 ERA. I wouldn't lose confidence in him. I still think he needs to be in these late inning opportunities, particularly with Trevor May out. So you have to go with what you have right now. And right now that means Diaz, Smith, and Lugo are sort of the guys. And to me, that was just indicative of Buck Showalter having an opportunity with a lead and trying to pounce and grab one of the two games. And once they got that first game, not that they completely took their foot off the gas in game two, but I do think that the mission of the day was accomplished. So it was a solid team victory to get the job done. Edwin Diaz did make things interesting, and I was really sweating it out because in this game of content creation, you know, at times I have people telling me I'm the jinx, and it is what it is, right? I got to do what I do. I got to break down what's going on the field. And when stuff's going well for the Mets, like Edwin Diaz pitching like a lockdown closer, I'm going to talk about it and I'm going to write about it. But the fact that that podcast had gone up on Tuesday and the article I wrote for Just Baseball went up on Tuesday, where I really broke down what Diaz has done so far this season to be successful. You then see him with two runners on base in a ninth inning. And I'm just, please, please, please don't blow this, because I know I'm going to hear it from the listeners. And luckily for me, Diaz got the job done, still gets three strikeouts in that inning. He's now faced 60 batters this year and has struck out 30 of them, which is just absolutely ridiculous. But it was big that he got that save, another opportunity where he was able to come through for the Mets, and they get that victory, which now sets them up to hopefully win a series with Scherzer and Bassett on the mound, or if anything, at least split the four-game set, which you'd love to win them, but you at least want to split those four-game series. And considering the fact that the Mets were able to steal that first game they played against the Cardinals this year and won that series, if you end up going up against a team like the Cardinals and you take four of the seven games, I think you're pretty happy still. Obviously, you want to win this series, and because they have Scherzer and Bassett on the hill, you still feel pretty good about their chances to do that. But the bats will have to wake up a little bit. I want to talk about that a little bit later, but I still have a whole second game to discuss, so we got to go into that. But first, with spring in the air, it is time for renewal and growth, and personally and professionally. As your small business grows, LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and for free. You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people. Then add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile, not your Locked On profile, your LinkedIn profile, to spread the word that you're hiring so your network can help you find the right people to hire. They have simple tools like screening questions that make it easier to focus on candidates with the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. Did you know that every week, nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonMLB. Again, that's linkedin.com/lockedonMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Believe that in game two of the Mets doubleheader, they got home runs from Mark Canna and Eduardo Escobar and still lost. A little bit unfortunate. Taijuan Walker was staked to a 2-1 lead thanks to those home runs going into the top of the fifth, but he gave up two in that inning, allowing three hits, two of them going for extra bases, walked a couple. Just not a good inning. And overall, I mean, Taiwan got knocked around a little bit. Gave up 7 hits, walked 2, 4 strikeouts, 3 earned runs, and 5 innings pitched. I think Taiwan Walker is in this point where, you know, as a 5th starter, he's fine. I do wonder his long-term, spot in this rotation. David Peterson is about to be up to fill in for Tyler McGill. He's thrown the ball really well this year. When McGill comes back, we know he's thrown the ball well. Jacob deGrom, we're going to talk about in the next segment. He could be back around the All-Star break. So Taiwan Walker is going to have to pick it up a little bit if he wants to remain in this rotation. I could see Taiwan Walker ending up in that Trevor Williams role, which, based on his salary and his pedigree, I'm sure he wouldn't be happy with that. But he's got to be a little bit better. And so far this year, even when he's had success, we haven't really seen him really pile up the strikeouts. He's done a good job pitching to contact, and his last time out was really gutsy. But I just don't know on any given start which version of Taiwan Walker you're going to get. And I think when you're looking at this Mets team, that's a little bit of a rarity, because it seems like with a lot of these other guys, especially Scherzer and Bassett, and in the earlier parts of the season, Carrasco and McGill, you did know what you were going to get from those guys. So we'll see how Walker progresses in his next start. Adonis Medina, great again. 6 1/3 scoreless for the Mets this season, 2 2/3. In this game, the Mets were trailing 3-2 in the bottom of the 8th inning. And once again, they capitalize on Cardinal mistakes. Lindor drew a 1-out walk. Pete Alonso ends up lining out. So you have 2 outs and a runner on. Eduardo Escobar strikes out, but a pass ball on that final strike allows him to get on base. And then Jeff McNeil, once again, when you're stupid enough to put any shift on Jeff McNeil in the infield, he will find that hole. They didn't even have a pronounced shift, but they did have the shortstop playing close to the bag, and that gave him an ocean. And Jeff McNeil, being the great hitter that he is with his elite bat-to-ball skills, stuck the bat out, got a base hit. Lindor comes around to score, and the Mets tied the game, and you're like, oh my God, they're going to steal another one. Unfortunately, they didn't. You can quibble a little bit with Buck Showalter's decision to throw Joely Rodriguez back out there. He got the last out in the 8th. Try to get him through the 9th, but you have to understand the position Buck Showalter's in. This is a doubleheader where he already has Drew Smith, Seth Lugo, Edwin Diaz off the table, Jake Reed as well, although he was actually optioned after that first game. You just didn't have a lot of options. You still maybe had Chase and Schrieff, you had Adam Ottavino, but you didn't know if you're going to go into extras. The game's tied at that point. I think if the Mets had a lead going into that 9th, we would have seen Ottavino start off the inning. But he wanted to try to get Joely through it. And you know what? If he doesn't walk a couple of batters, maybe he does get through it. But that's what happened. He gets some walks. And you look at the position that Adam Ottavino comes into. You know, Brandon Donovan had drawn a walk. He stole second. He gets the third base on a pass ball. So you have a runner 90 feet away. Ottavino does a good job striking out Nolan Arenado. But then Tyler O'Neill comes up. And you think, all right, he's been awful. I mean, Tyler O'Neill looked atrocious all day long. Just looks like he has no idea up there. He's just guessing. And he guessed right with a check swing grounder, and that's how you lose. And I know Eduardo Escobar could have made that play, or fans would have hoped he would make that play. And granted, I think at times he's a really weird player defensively, because he makes some of the best throws you're going to see from a third baseman, at least from a Mets third baseman in some time. Maybe not since a Todd Frazier, as far as he was pretty solid over there. But then before that, like ever since David Wright had his back issues and all of his injuries and really kind of slowed down defensively in the early 2010s, there just hasn't been much great defense over at third base. And Escobar, his metrics are terrible this year, probably due to a lack of range. I also think he's not great coming in on the ball. And that, you know, let me actually look up that really quick, because I can get that information for you and try to see a breakdown of it, because it is confusing when you're watching Escobar. And in that play, you know, he bobbles it. He doesn't, you know, get off a clean throw. Tyler O'Neill probably beats it out anyway. You're looking this year at what he's done based on outs above average. It's -2 outs above average. Going back on the ball, he's fine. Going left, going right, he's okay. So yeah, going in on the ball, that's what it is. He's bad going in on the ball. And we saw that on that play. So clearly that's his issue. I don't know how you correct it. You know, he likes to play on the line and back a little bit, and that's going to lead to some instances where he just doesn't make that play coming in, and it's going to haunt you a little bit. But I do think that the rarity of those plays overall, it's you just have to live with it. And I don't see the solution on this team where Escobar. Actually, the one thing that Mets could do, the one solution that is out there, is to start Louis Guillorme every day and have Escobar be your DH. That's the one solution. But Guillorme is getting a lot of playing time. They're mixing and matching. So you're going to see a healthy diet of Escobar at third, and I'm not overly concerned about it. Obviously, that was the winning run, and you lose on a check swing grounder. And the Mets, you know, they threatened in the ninth. Dom drew a walk. Guillorme got a hit. But Mark Canha and Lindor both struck out with those runners on, and that ended the game. So a doubleheader split. I don't think we need to spend any more time on it. The Mets got the job done to get one. Now the onus is on them with their two horses on the mound to win this series. And that means the lineup has to do a little bit more. And we're going to talk about that as well as give some injury updates in just a minute. But can you imagine if you close your eyes, right, and you dip your finger into a plastic tub of birthday cake frosting, but then you're opening your eyes and you realize, oh, no, this is not just frosting. This is actually a Built Bar puff that comes with only 150 calories and 16 grams of protein. That's exactly the experience you will have eating the new birthday cake puffs, which are absolutely delicious. I just received my first box of them, and I've never had anything quite like it when it comes to a protein bar. You know, covered in 100% real chocolate, the birthday cakes, it's white chocolate. The first ever protein-infused marshmallow are these puffs. They have the churro flavor, the banana cream pie, all so delicious. All Built puffs come covered in that 100% real chocolate. That means that with Built, you can eat healthy, but you actually enjoy doing it. And they're made with a collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. So if you want to try the birthday cake puffs now, go to Built.com. And once you're there, use the promo code LOCK15. You're going to get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, so we will start with the most pressing injury news, which is the update on Jacob DeGrom. Got the follow-up imaging. It all came back clean. The scapula is healing, but he's not throwing off a mound yet. They're going to play this super slow right now. They're going to build out his distance. They're going to let him start to throw the ball a little bit harder, but they are not going to put him on a slope until they're 100% sure that he is healthy and ready to ramp up. And even then, I imagine the ramp up will be slow. There's going to be bullpens. There's going to be live ABs. Eventually, they'll get him in a rehab start, but I still think they'll go one inning on the first rehab start, two innings on the next one, three innings, four innings, five innings. I imagine he'll get like five rehab starts. They're going to build this really slow. I wouldn't even expect DeGrom until the other side of the All-Star break. That's what I've been saying pretty much this whole time, just because the goal here is to get to the end of the season with a healthy Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom does not really change the floor of this team. I mean, obviously, to a certain extent, he does, because when he's on the mound, the Mets are a better team. But my point more is we're seeing the floor of this team without him, and it's still a team that's in first place. What you want is Jacob DeGrom healthy in October and healthy really even in September to close down a division potentially in a pennant race. And right now, I just don't think that there's any reason to push it. Even with McGill down, even with some of the inconsistencies with Taijuan Walker and Carrasco not having a great start the last time out, you have David Peters, who's been throwing the ball really well. He's going to slide right back into their rotation. You love what you've gotten from Scherzer and Bassett. And at this point, I think you just keep rolling. You even have a Trevor Williams, who at least is going to throw strikes and give you a chance if he had to make another spot starter too. They got to play it safe here and make sure that DeGrom is ready when the games really count. Now, the other injury news is Brandon Nimmo fouled a ball off of his quad. Right now, it's basically just a bruised quad, you know, quad contusion. They said he's day-to-day. They said he hopes to play tomorrow. I doubt we see him in the lineup. You know, you don't want to run around out there chasing down fly balls in the center field. Maybe he's available as a pinch hitter. I would not be surprised if they held him out for the remainder of this series as far as the starting lineup is concerned. Make sure he heals properly, especially a player with that type of an injury history. You just don't want him to, you know, be playing hurt and then aggravate something else in the process. So that is the news on him. Starling Marte will be away from the team for at least a couple of days. His grandmother passed away. His mom passed away when he was 10. So his grandmother really raised him. So just horrible news for him. And it comes at an awful time because it's, I believe today, as you're listening to this, on Wednesday, the two-year anniversary of when his wife passed away. So just been a really tough couple of years for Starling Marte. Thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family right now. Just awful news. And, you know, in the meantime, the Mets are going to have to go without him. But I think everyone understands that, you know, there's stuff outside of the game with life that is more important. So hopefully we see him back on the field soon enough. But, you know, hopefully he also can take this time and you know, take all the time that he needs. When it comes to the Mets, you know, roster without him, they called up this guy that claimed off of waivers in the Blue Jays. I'm totally going to butcher the name. Gosuke Kato? We'll go with that. You know, utility infielder. I don't know if we even ever see him on the field with the Mets. That could have just been a doubleheader addition. Maybe he's here for the next couple of days until Marte comes back. Who really knows? I just don't imagine that a late-hitting utility infielder is going to do much and really get on the field much in the meantime. Let's go through the Mets lineup of the last 15 days, though, because it has not been great. And you go up and down, and there's five hitters with an OPS over 641. One of them is Patrick Mazik, who only has 8 at-bats. You look at the group. You got Pete Alonso over the last 15 days, hitting 288, 373 on base, 577 slugging, 4 home runs, 3 doubles, 950 OPS. He's been fine. He will be fine. Anyone that doubts a Pete Alonso at this point, I just don't know what you've been watching across his career. Even when he has his slumps, he still finds a way to be productive at times with the sacrifice flies, still draws his walks even when he's not hitting. And then he'll go on these tears. We still haven't seen a real Alonso tear yet. And I imagine that with the weather warming up, it's going to come soon. Even with this sandbag they're playing with when it comes to the baseball that's clearly deadened, Alonso's going to start to hit some more home runs. Right now, though, he's still producing. Nimmo continues to be great. We talked about him earlier this week. 347 average, 439 on base, 469 slugging, a 908 OPS. And Starling Marte was coming out of it too, a 326 average over the last 11 games played, 340 on base, 543 slugging, 883 OPS, had 5 doubles, a triple, and a home run across that span. Now we get to Guillorme. 300 average over his last 9 games played, 391 on base, 841 OPS, 450 slugging. For this season, Guillorme has a 765 OPS. He's hitting 275. He's getting on base at a 373 clip. Look, I've been saying it for years on this show. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know how big of a fan I am of Luis Guillorme. The guy's awesome. He's awesome defensively. He gives you good at-bats. Ever since the second half of 2019, he's going to get on base at a 350 to 370 clip at least. Just a grinder up there. I love watching him play. You know, there was an incredible diving stop he had that didn't result in an out, but just like the feat of athleticism from him, his hands, to be able to get that ball in the hole, you know, dive, make that stop, flip the ball to Lindor because he had no chance to make either play. Lindor was a step slow getting to second base. You know, there was just no chance there and had no play at first, but still such an incredible stop by Guillorme. I really do think that there is a world here that the Mets in the playoffs would be rolling with Guillorme as the starting third baseman and Jeff McNeil at second with the outfield that we expect of Canna, you know, Marte and Nemo. And of course, you know, you have Lindor and Alonso and everything else, but I could see that. And with, I don't know if that would mean Escobar's your DH. I don't know what that would mean for Eduardo Escobar, who over his last 12 games, by the way, is hitting 156 with a 240 on base and a 289 slugging, a 529 OPS. I just think that Guillorme is a gamer that just helps you win. He just does. And so I love all the playing time he's getting, and I want him to get even more anytime when he's not in the lineup, you know, except for maybe against lefties. I don't know if he doesn't really fare too well against lefties. So I get that. But if it's a righty start on the mound, I put him out there for his defense. And because he's going to move the line along, he's going to get on base at least once generally, in any given start. You look at the rest of the team, though. Mark Canna, over the last 15 days, 171 hitter, 250 on base, 343 slugging, 593 OPS. Does have two home runs, so that's good to see, but just been a slog for him. JD Davis, I campaigned for more playing time because Dom has been so dreadful. And look, JD hasn't done any better. 179 hitter, 294 on base, 286 slugging, 580 OPS. Dom Smith, 120 over his last 10 games, 154 on base, 200 slugging. It's been up and down the roster. Lindor, 154, 246 on base, 288 slugging, 534 OPS. I still think he's taking decent at bats. I know there's fans that will push back on that. I don't get as concerned about Lindor and the results as everyone else. I just, what he does for you as a complete player, in my opinion, outweighs some of these slumps that we're seeing, but I get the pessimism around him as well. Other than that, you got Jankowski. I mean, it's only 15 at bats over his last 10 games. He's obviously playing a defensive replacement, you know, speedster, pinch runner type role, but his bat's gone cold, 133 average, 235 on base, 133 slugging. Look, this is getting to the point where I wonder how much longer until you call up like a Nick Plummer. Nick Plummer, you look at what he's done in May, sitting 317 with three home runs, five doubles, 333 on base, 659 slugging. He homered again on, today on Tuesday. He's homered, two times in the last three games. This is a guy that I just think has some legit pop. I think that he would play a pretty good outfield out there and left. He's got some take, and he just would maybe give you a shot in the arm. So if Brandon Nimmo wakes up tomorrow and they have to throw him on the IL, Nick Plummer, no doubt coming up. But I would even like to see him up sooner than that. I'd like to see him up instead of our boy, what was it, Gusuke Kato. I'd rather see him on the roster. I'd rather see him get playing time because I think Nick Plummer has a chance to help this team. And I wonder how much longer you go with Dom Smith and JD Davis. And I'll be honest, you know, they were talking about getting Mark Canna some playing time at first base and getting him some reps there. I think that Pete Alonso can certainly just play first base every single day. But you could throw a Canna at first. You could throw a JD Davis at first. You could throw Eduardo Escobar at first. And I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth, but I do wonder how long you wait until maybe you do send a Dom Smith down and call Nick Plummer up and you have Nick Plummer take that spot as the left-handed hitter in a platoon and see what he gives you. And because then, even though the Mets have in my opinion, made a mistake by going with this reverse split platoon where you have Dom who's better against lefties and JD who's better against righties, and they're flipping them the wrong way just based on which side of the plate they hit from. Keep doing that with Plummer instead of Dom, maybe. And JD can start against lefties. You can shield Plummer against left-handed pitching and see what you got there. And maybe Dom gets hot in the minors. He does have those options. I would hate to see it because I love Dom so much as a homegrown player that we've watched, and he's such a great personality. And he did actually have a pretty decent doubleheader today, so maybe not the best timing for this. But at a certain point, if you need something, I look at Nick Plummer. I look at Daniel Palka to a certain extent, and then I'm hoping that we see a lot from Mark Vientos over the month of June that maybe he can grab that job and run with it. Because you know, remember me back in the offseason, I was campaigning for Mark Vientos to be this team's DH out of spring. Obviously, that wouldn't have been the best decision based on how he's hit to start his season, but he's starting to come out of it. And I just think that he has a ceiling that is just higher than anything that currently exists on the Mets roster or even in Syracuse right now. Other than that, the Mets might have to make a move at the deadline. So that's going to be all for this edition of Locked On Mets. Max Scherzer on the hill. We got a great game to talk about tomorrow. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, hosted by Paul Francis Sullivan, but we call him Sully. Locked On MLB is where you want to go to stay up to date with everything going on in Major League Baseball. You can follow Locked On MLB wherever you get podcasts.